Good morning. We're going to begin just one small piece of housekeeping. Everyone on their way in should have picked up a packet of sheets that are in the back table. There are sign-in sheets, there are sign-out sheets, and feedback forms. Everyone has to, for the credits, everything has to be filled out and submitted before the end of the seminar in order to get the CLE credits. So please, if you do not have the sheet, please make sure you pick one up before you leave. Now, the topic for the first shiur is going to be choosing a venue. In many ways, this can be the most important decision that you make throughout the entire din Torah process. The halacha is fixed. It's not going to change. The facts of the case, hopefully as well, are not going to change throughout the process. And therefore, the impact or the one decision that you make that can have a meaningful difference in how the process plays itself out is in choosing which Beis Din to go to. Hello?
Is it plugged in? She's asking.
Okay. I'll try talking a bit louder. Now, in civil law, there are 50 states, there are 50 sets of rules, and in general, when there is a contract, there are provisions, choice of law provisions, there are provisions that define which venue will deal with the matter. Once that's out of the way, you file a lawsuit. You're assigned a judge, and there's little you can do to influence who is going to actually adjudicate the case. If you're not happy with the result, you can file an appeal. Halacha, as we will see, has a very different structure. While we do not have a concept of a choice of law, because halacha is halacha, it doesn't change. And we have one Torah who was given from Moshe Rabbeinu, and there are no choices or decisions that need to be made as far as what law should apply. However, as we will see, there's a wide latitude as far as which Beis Din to go to, which venue to adjudicate the matter, and what the structure of that Beis Din will be. Now, as we will see, there is the theory, there is what the halacha is, and then there's the practice. The practice as it today is very different than the picture that emerges from learning through Shulchan Aruch, learning through the sugyas. Some of the reasons are practical. Some of the reasons are legal. There have been changes that are made in order to conform with legal requirements of the arbitration system. But it's important to have an understanding of what the fundamental, what the yesodis and halacha are, and that will give everyone a better understanding and more confidence in navigating the system. So to begin with, the first thing that is very clear is that really from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, Parshas Yisroi describes that there were many different batei din. There were sarei alafim, sarei meyeh, sarei chamishim, sarei asarois. You seem to have had a Beis Din, or at least a dayan, for every 10 people. Now, obviously, Jews have been litigating quite a bit for the past 2,000 years. Perhaps that explains why we have so many attorneys. But the question that arises is that if we have so many batei din, if every 10 people has their own personal dayan that present their questions, how do we deal with situations where there's a conflict? One dayan or Beis Din will have one approach, another Beis Din will have a different approach. How do we sort things out? How do we decide where to litigate the matter and what kind of hierarchy do we have in making decisions? So the first point that needs to be made is that midoraisa al pi halacha, there are different types of Beis Din. There are some matters where a Beis Din of Gimel, three dayanim are enough. There are matters that are more serious, you know, capital punishment cannot be meted out by three people. You have a Beis Din of Chof Gimel, and then you have other matters that are literally of national importance where you have a Sanhedrin. You need 71 people in order to paskin. Besides for differences in the amount of Dayanim, there are also differences in the qualifications. Midoraisa, for most issues, you need a Beis Din of Smuchim. You need the Dayanim to have Smicha. Now, that doesn't sound very difficult. Many people today have smicha. However, when we talk about smicha in the context of a Beis Din, smicha needed to be in Eretz Yisrael. It needed to be given from Moshe Rabbeinu Rebbe to Talmud, an unbroken chain. That no longer exists. We do not have a true smicha today, and therefore, midoraisa, mikar hadin, batei din do not have the right to function. On top of that, even when smicha did exist, as you can imagine, if you needed smicha for Moshe Rabbeinu, were handed down from one rebbe to the next, it was rather difficult. And if every time a debtor defaulted on his mortgage, you had to gather together the three gedolei hador, people who had smicha, it would have a chilling effect on commerce. It would be very difficult and time-consuming to actually put together a panel that was qualified to act as a beis din. And therefore, we find that in many instances, the Chachamim relaxed the requirements. And they ruled that even Gimel Hedyotes, any three lay people, are qualified to act as a beis din. Now this, of course, raises serious problems. If any three lay people are qualified to act as dayanim, what kind of confidence do we have in their verdicts? And if you don't like the verdict, what kind of recourse do you have? If you say these people, they're nice, they're lay people, it's convenient, but I want the truth. So here we find two important points. The first point is that if you go to Beis Din and the dayanim make a mistake, they get it wrong, they're either incompetent or they make a mistake. Under many circumstances, the dayanim are personally liable for any loss that the litigant suffers. There's liability. Now, I don't think that works. If you try suing a federal judge, I don't think you'll get very far. But as far as halacha is concerned, a dayan should not be practicing if he is not very confident that he knows the halacha. And if he gets it wrong, in many cases, he is personally responsible for any damage that occurs. Now, this is not across the board. Simon Chatei discusses the parameters, and there are quite a complex set of parameters when the liability applies. But conceptually, if someone decides to sit on a beis din, it might sound good. He might think it looks good for his resume, but he has very significant exposure al pi halacha. Now, based on that, that is the explanation. When you take three lay people, although they're qualified to sit as dayanim, the Gemara explains, because if you have three people, then one of the three, in all likelihood, will be a Talmud Chacham, one of the three will be competent, and will know the halacha well enough, and will be able to ensure that the verdict comes out right. Now, statistically, if you stop people on the streets in Borough Park, and stop three people, what are the chances that one of the three is a true expert in Chayish Mishpat? Not very high. But now that we understand that someone who sits on a beis din has personal liability for any mistakes, now already we can understand. If you take three people who are willing to accept upon themselves the responsibility of sitting on a din Torah, there you have a pretty good chance that at least one of the three is going to be a gomer, at least one of the three is going to be a Talmud Chacham, and that's why we can have more confidence in the actual verdict and the psak that they issue. Now, on top of that, if there's liability for getting it wrong, then obviously there needs to be a system in place where you can appeal a psak. Where if you think there's an error, you can go ahead and escalate and bring it to a court of appeals, if you will, to determine whether or not the verdict was correct. And that is, according to at least al-pi halacha, there was always a bezin hagadol. We all know the concept of a zakein mamre. If you went to a din Torah, you feel the psak was an error, you generally had the right to go to the bezin hagadol, explain to them what happened, and have them review the case. Now again, there are certain limitations. Bezin, just like the Supreme Court, doesn't take just any appeal. There are halachas about beidina beidina beidaika, when a beis din will reopen the matter, but at least conceptually, if you are unhappy with the psak, you had the right to go to the beis din hagadol, you had the right to have the matter revisited and either overturned, and in some cases even go after the dayanim if there was an error. This is all al pi halacha. In practice, at least in the United States, this does not exist for a number of reasons. In general, when you go to a din Torah, the first thing that will happen is the beis din will insist that you sign an arbitration agreement and a shtar berurin. Now, if anyone has ever read these arbitration agreements or shtar berurin, It's one of my favorite things is to, when an attorney comes in who's never seen this before, you hand him the arbitration agreement and you just watch his face while he starts reading it. And in general, they are just shocked that you can have such a absurd one-sided document in which the litigants literally sign away any possible right that they have. Now, among the many rights that are signed away is the right to appeal the psak din, is the right to go to another Beis Din, argue that the first Beis Din was an error, and to have them overturn the psak. One of the major reasons why a Beis Din will insist on this waiver is that in the United States, if the psak is appealable, if you could just go to another Beis Din and reopen the matter, then the arbitration award is not final. If it is not final, it is generally cannot be confirmed in court. It will not be enforceable. So while conceptually the idea of filing appeal is something which people want, it sounds fair and right, and halacha certainly recognizes that right, if you insist on it, you will lose the legal enforceability of the entire dintaira and really create a very significant risk that after winning the dintaira, the other party may simply refuse to pay and you will have no recourse in court. And therefore, in the United States, the practice has evolved to waive any rights of appeal, to waive any rights to go to another Beis Din, in order to make sure that the psak din is final and that it's actually enforceable. Now, this is true only in the United States. In Israel, they have a very different situation. There, the arbitration system is set up differently. The courts there are a little bit, I guess, more skeptical about religious arbitration, and therefore, they have the exact opposite rule. For a Beis Din's ruling to be enforceable, it needs to be subject to appeal. You need to have a transcript or some sort of recording that took during the session, and you have to have the ability to appeal it to the Beis Din HaGadol. You have to have some system of appeals to hold the Beis Din in check to make sure that they paskin correctly, and therefore that is how it's structured in Eretz Yisrael. But they didn't typically give you the right to file these appeals, and that's all there in order to enable the psak to be enforceable and to ensure that when there is a psak din, it will actually be followed through. Now in the United States, like as I mentioned, the practice is not like that. The practice is to waive such rights. There is one exception. The Beis Din of America actually does allow appeals, but their appeal is a very limited internal appeal. You have the right to appeal to, within the Beis Din, they have their own panel that will review the psak din of the Beis Din. But even so, it's a very limited appeal, and it has to be done internally, because otherwise you're going to really run the risk the entire psak din will not be enforceable. Now, as part of the waiver, besides waiving your right to appeal, you generally, the dayanim very often will ask for an indemnification, where if they get it wrong, then you are a moichel, you're waiving any claim you have against the dayanim personally. The reason for that is, I guess, rather simple, at least from a dayanim's perspective. They do not want this liability. You do not have errors and omissions insurance available for dayanim, and therefore it would be problematic. And besides that, this liability is somewhat theoretical, because to the extent that you waive your rights to appeal the psak din, once there's no right of appeal, once there's no other Beis Din that has the ability to reopen the matter and investigate whether the halacha is correct or not, it is now therefore impossible in practice to collect from a dayan, because there's no way to verify that there was a mistake. We don't have a Beis Din HaGadol, and therefore it is only negei kafei shnaya, and you're not giving up much in a practical sense by signing such a waiver. So this is at least what happens as far as an appeal, as far as the finality of a psak. The next question that comes up is, how do you determine or how do you decide what Beis Din to go to? Now, there's a little game that is played. I don't know how familiar the audience is with they've been actually involved in Dinei Torah or in Hazmanas. But very often, there'll be a dispute between two from Jews. They realize there's an obligation to resolve the matter in Beis Din. So one of them will go to a Beis Din and send a Hazmana, which is essentially a summons that demanding that the defendant appear in front of the Beis Din and to litigate the matter. The knee-jerk reaction of virtually every nitzvah when he receives the summons is, okay, speaks to his rav, I see I do have an obligation to go to Beis Din. But I'll go to any Beis Din except for the Beis Din that sent me the hazmana. Because if the plaintiff chose that Beis Din, he must have a good reason. He must have decided this bezin is the most beneficial for him, and therefore I'm willing to go anywhere except for that bezin. So I'd like to go through, first from a halachic perspective, how to decide or who gets to decide which bezin to go to, and then discuss from a practical perspective some, you know, just some observations that I've come across over the years. Halacha has two very clear gemaras that discuss what happens when there's a dispute between the plaintiff and the defendant over where to litigate. Now the problem is that while we have two very clear gemaras that seem to give very clear guidelines, the guidelines are the exact opposite of each other. And we're going to have to sift through how to resolve this contradiction. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that if a plaintiff sues the nitzvah, and the plaintiff says that I don't want to litigate the matter in a local bezdin. The local bezdin has, you know, limited competence. I'd like to go to the Beis Avad, which was a larger bezdin in a larger city, which had greater talmidei chachamim, more competent dayanim. I'd like to go there. So the Gemara says the plaintiff has the right to insist that the venue be moved to the Beis Avad, to this better or more competent bezdin, even though it involves travel, even though there is a local bezdin available. The plaintiff can say, What? No, what? No, the plaintiff. The teveh. No, we'll get that. It's the other gemara. The plaintiff has the right to say, to choose, I want to go to the bezdin that is further. It is not up to the nitzvah. It is not up to the defendant. And the gemara explains, because if the defendant had the ability to say, I want to travel, so what would it be if you had a small case? You had a claim against someone for $1,000. So if the defendant had the right to say, you know what, the local bezdin I don't have confidence in, I'd like to travel to Texas to litigate the matter. So you're going to spend moitzi mana, the masayim amana, is the Gemara's lashon, you will spend more on the travel and on the litigation expenses than you're actually fighting about, and that will be a very simple way for a defendant to avoid having to answer to a bezdin. And therefore, the defendant has no choice. He cannot move the venue to another city, even if there is a Beis Avad, even if there is a more competent bezdin. However, the teveya, the plaintiff, who presumably he is the plaintiff, he is the one who is trying to be Meitzi Mama, and he's looking for an award, he has the right to say, I don't want the local bezdin, I want the more competent, the Beis Avad. That is the first gemara that says that that really has two chidushim. It's number one, do not necessarily have to litigate locally, but number two, the plaintiff is the one that has the upper hand. He's the one that can choose the venue. The Gemara in Bava Kamma seems to say the exact opposite. The Gemara in Bava Kamma is discussing about a defendant that was called in front of a bezdin and was trying to avoid coming to the bezdin, and the Gemara says the defendant has the right to say, I don't want to deal with the matter in a local bezdin. I want to go to the bezdin Hagadol B'Yerushalayim. I want to go straight to the top. I want to go straight to the Supreme Court. And the Gemara seems to say that, yes, a defendant has the right to do so. Now, interestingly, the Gemara is silent whether the plaintiff has that right. So if you look at Tosfos, this is in Bava Kamma, Kuf Yud Beis, Tosfos says that, wait a second, if we've already learned that when there's an issue about the Beis Avad, the plaintiff has the upper hand, he can insist that it be moved even though the defendant cannot. So then, if the defendant has the right to say, I want to go straight to Yerushalayim, I want to go to the Bezdin HaGadol, then certainly the plaintiff has that right as well, and either party would have the right to say, I want to go to the Bezdin HaGadol. Now, based on this, the way many learn is that it depends on the type of Bezdin we're dealing with. We have a local Bezdin, we have the Beis Avad, which is a step up. It's a larger Bezdin, a larger city, more Dayanim there. And then we have the Bezdin HaGadol, which is the absolute top, which is the Supreme Court, if you will. What many Rishonim learn is that if the issue is whether I use a local Bezdin or a step up, there the plaintiff has the upper hand. The defendant is forced to litigate locally if that's the plaintiff's choice, because we do not want him to use this as an excuse to avoid litigation. The plaintiff has the right to say, I'd like to go to the Beis Avad, I'd like to go to the better Bezdin. That's only when it's a Beis Avad. However, when the issue at hand is to go to the Bezdin HaGadol, when the issue is going straight to the top, where you're going to get a final psak that can't be appealed, this is Emes Lamita, you have the full Sanhedrin, That right is something we cannot deny any party, and either party has the right to make that claim. So if a litigant wants to play hardball and says, I would like to go to Yerushalayim, go to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, in theory, at least according to some Rishonim, you have the right to do so. Now this, of course, is also leaves open the door for abuse. And therefore, what many Rishonim say is that if anyone tries to exercise this right, if anyone says, I'd like to take the matter to Yerushalayim, what they do first do is they first have an informal session in a local Bezdin to see if there really is a claim. If there really is basis, we want to make sure that, first of all, the plaintiff, this is not a frivolous lawsuit, because to allow a frivolous lawsuit and schlepping the person to Yerushalayim is simply unfair. So the local Bezdin will make sure that there is a claim, there is a reasonable defense. They're obviously not going to rule on the matter, but when they see there is basis for a litigation, they will then force the parties to go to the Bezdin HaGadol. But in the absence of that, if the Bezdin sees there's nothing doing, there's no basis for the claim, then they will not allow either party to force it to another city. So this is when there's a fight over which Bezdin to go to. Go to one city or another city. And
I also, if I recall, the defendant has a right to choose the Bezdin.
Okay, we'll get there. As I mentioned before, there's the halacha when you go through the Gemara and the Rishonim, and then there's a much later on, Marik, Ramah, which will drastically change things in practice today. But if you now in the sugyas, the plaintiff has the upper hand. I know this is surprising for people. Everyone just hears the nitzvah, chooses, does what he wants. Again, it's not true. The halacha, the minog is more like that, and we'll get to that soon. Now, this is all dealing with cases where there's a local bezdin of average competence. There's the Beis Avad, which is clearly a better Bezdin. And there's the Sanhedrin HaGadol, which is the top. That's very nice when there's a Sanhedrin, when there's a Beis Avad, when we have a formal system and a formal hierarchy. As we all know today, that doesn't exist. We do not have a Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim. And quite frankly, we don't have any hierarchy or any structure in place. We have an informal collection of batei din, sometimes appointed by a kehila, sometimes self-appointed, sometimes a zabla. But we run into a very serious question of how do we determine which is the Beis Avad and which is the local Bezdin. Maybe the local Bezdin is more competent than the Beis Avad. And how do we define a Sanhedrin HaGadol? Do we have a Sanhedrin HaGadol? So because of these issues, the Marik and the later Achroinim, at least the Ashkenazi place, can all say these halachas do not apply today. Because if you tried applying the halachas, we would then get into a stalemate where each person says, my Rebbe's Bezdin is the Bezdin Sanhedrin HaGadol, and each person has his flavor or his kehilo that he's part of. So to avoid these kinds of issues, we, in halacha, at least according to the Ashkenazim, we assume there's no such thing as a Bezdin HaGadol. There's no such thing as a Beis Avad, and therefore no one has the right to insist that take the matter out of town. Every matter has to be litigated locally by the batei din that are available. Now, locally, or how to define locally, is an issue that does come up. Clearly, if you get a hasmana from someplace out of town, you're called to a bezin in Chicago or in Baltimore, a place which is certainly out of town, there is no right for a party to force the litigation to a different city. When you're dealing with within the tri-state area, Lakewood, New York, Muncie, there already the matter is less clear. The Rajba says within 3 parsois, which is a distance that people travel regularly for business, that is all considered local. We do not look at the city limits. We don't look at Tzfum Shabbos. We look at the area where people do commerce. And therefore, typically today, the batei din, if you're in Brooklyn and you get called to a bezdin in Muncie, that's typically considered local, and this would not be an issue. But if you're called out of town, there already you have the right to say, we did business here, we're located here, the litigation has to be here. Even if you claim there's a better bezdin elsewhere, you don't have the right to impose that judgment call on the other party. Now, what happens if there are multiple batei din?
What is the underlying agreement that they're disputing as a vendor?
Then, like everything else with financial matters, any tanai, any contract that you make will be binding. And therefore, if the contract is drafted correctly and it specifies a particular bezdin, the parties will be bound to go to that bezdin. I will add that you have to be careful drafting it. Some of these contracts, the way they're written, are Kinyan Dvarim. I believe that was the subject of the last CLE that we held here a few months ago. We won't revisit the matter. But if it is drafted correctly, then it will be enforceable, and you have the right to go to the Beis Din that was specified in the contract. So, again, to recap briefly, if there's a local Beis Din, today the right to go elsewhere does not exist, and the parties can insist the litigation be here. This is the area where everyone did business, and this is where everyone lives. Now, how do we deal with conflicts in the same city? If there are different Batei Din, and the plaintiff chooses one Beis Din, the defendant prefers a different Beis Din. So here, according to strict halacha, because we see in the Gemara the plaintiff has the upper hand, the plaintiff has greater rights as far as choosing the city, so it is very logical that the same thing would apply within a city. If there are two Batei Din, and it's a question of which one to go to, then Medina de Gemara, the place can say, the plaintiff should have the upper hand, he should be able to determine which Beis Din to go to. That being said, just like we mentioned before, the minhag today is you cannot move the venue out of town. In order to avoid fights, we do not get into this, which Beis Din is greater than the other Beis Din. Hu Hadin, the same applies when there are more than one local Batei Din, and therefore the Rashdam says that if the Nitzvah is willing to accept a legitimate Beis Din, then the Taveya cannot force it elsewhere. And this way, number one, you will minimize fights wherever the Nitzvah can choose where to go. The second point is there's a greater probability of the Nitzvah, of the defendant abiding by the Pesach, if he had input as where the litigation is. In other words, if the plaintiff would have the right to force his or impose his choice of Beis Din, then the defendant that had no choice where to go, that was hauled in front of the Beis Din that he's not comfortable with, is less likely to follow the Pesach, regardless of whether he has a halakhic right not to. Masha'inkein, if the defendant has input, has the ability to choose a Beis Din, or at least not be forced to the plaintiff's choice of Beis Din, there is a greater probability that he will listen to the Pesach at the end. Now that being said, we really have to go back to one more difference between the structure today and historically. In many communities, the communities had a structure. There was Zayin Tov Ya'ir. The Jewish communities, regardless of where they were, had elected officials that were in charge of communal affairs. And very often, there was a Beis Din or a Dayan that was appointed by the community. Now, in that case, if there is a Beis Din Kavua, if the community appoints a Beis Din, then neither party has the right to say, I'd like to go out of our community. I'd like to put together a Zabla and like to go to another Beis Din. So when there is a Beis Din Kavua, when you have an area where there is a Beis Din which is appointed by the people or the representatives of the people, then that Beis Din has significantly more power and can force the parties to appear in front of them. In certain kihilos, you have that. In certain out-of-town communities, there are Batei Din that consider themselves a Beis Din Kavua. You have certain kihilos which are where there's a central authority, whether it's a rebbe or just a close-knit kehila, where they have the ability to create a Beis Din. And if they create a Beis Din, then any member of the kehila is bound to the jurisdiction of that Beis Din and can say, I'd like to go elsewhere. However, in the general Flatbush, Lakewood areas, where people are not necessarily part of one cohesive kehila, where the achdus doesn't exist to appoint a specific Beis Din, here we have a very different situation. Here we have multiple Batei Din, and the plaintiff does not have the right to force. The Nitzvah has the right to say, I do not want to go to a particular Beis Din.
In the event that, who decides whether an alternative Beis Din is legitimate or powerful?
Very good point. Very good point. So what happens is like this. The Teveya, the plaintiff who initiates the Din Torah, he sends out a hasmana from a particular Beis Din. As I mentioned, the defendant's knee-jerk reaction is generally, I'll go anywhere but this Beis Din. Now, I will point out that this reaction is rather silly, really for two reasons. The first is, the reaction is based on an assumption that this defendant is this brilliant and sinister tactician who knows exactly what the case is about, what the defense will be, understands what each Beis Din or each Dayan on this Beis Din's position will be on this particular matter, and therefore chose this Beis Din because it will be to their advantage. Now, in general, that's baloney. The person chooses the Beis Din to hazmana that either charges the least to send the hazmana or is the most convenient. That is generally the beginning and the end of that decision-making process. On top of that, today, where everyone knows that when you get a hazmana, the response is, I'll go anywhere except the Beis Din that sends the hazmana, people will generally send the hazmana from the one Beis Din they don't want to go to. Because that's the guarantee in their safety net. They know they will not end up anywhere but here. So, in fact, I would say, until the word gets out, but if you want to know my personal advice, is you're probably best off accepting the Beis Din that you get the hazmana, because you will really catch the plaintiff off guard. Because that's not what he's expecting. This is probably the one Beis Din he doesn't want to be in. And therefore, if you believe he has such confidence and has made such calculations, then you're probably better off doing the opposite. Of course, after the shiur, word gets spreads about the shiur, then perhaps it'll change. You'll have to do some reverse psychology. You'll worry about it then. But in general, I think people spend a lot of time and a lot of effort in these kinds of decisions or maneuvering that really has little connection to reality or what will really happen. Now, okay, there definitely are conflicts of interest. The general advice when you get a hazmana from a Beis Din that you do not want to appear to. Wait, let me just finish. If there is a true conflict of interest, if he is posel, he is in al pi halacha, he cannot serve as a dayan, he cannot send a hazmana either. That being said, if your response is going to be, I believe you're posel and therefore I'm not responding, his response is going to be, I believe I'm not posel and therefore he's going to threaten to put out a seer, you're going to go through the... There's no point of going down that route, because the most you'll accomplish is the plaintiff will now go down the block, send the hazmana from another Beis Din, which you'll have to respond to. So instead of going through the whole routine of, I think you're possible, therefore I don't want to answer you, and then either you'll win or you'll lose, but even if you win, he'll just send the hazmana from the Beis Din down the block, you may as well respond right away, I'm willing to come to a Beis Din, but I'm not coming to you. Either because you're possible, but you don't even have to explain your reasons. You don't have to give. You can just say, I simply don't want to come to you. That's a perfectly legitimate response, and give alternate bateidin. Now, there are times, I've actually had a case where a hazmana was sent, and the person said he's willing to go to two specific dayanim. One dayan was actually his brother-in-law. The other dayan was not related, an extremely confident dayan, who unfortunately was in a coma at the time. So in that particular case, a Beis Din Hamazmin will generally use a little bit of common sense and say, we can't force you to come in front of us, but we could force you to name a legitimate Beis Din. There is a certain amount of judgment call when he'll name someone who you can argue whether that is a legitimate Beis Din or not. It's really the Beis Din that is sending the hazmana that will make that decision. What will typically happen, and we'll get to this in a moment, when there is a stalemate or where the parties can't agree which Beis Din to go to, it will end up in front of a Zavlo, which we're going to discuss at length in a moment.
But my question is...
What?
How many times can you say how long is that Beis Din?
You can never be forced to go to any particular Beis Din. That is that, period. Unless you live in a community where there's a Beis Din Kavua, you have to respond to any Beis Din. Even three people who get together and say, three head yoytis, attend the hazmana, you have to respond. But it's perfectly legit, and you have to say where you're willing to litigate the matter. So as long as you respond, I'm willing to go to a Beis Din, this is my Beis Din, or these three batei din are all choices that I will accept. At that point, the Beis Din Hamazmin will pass that along to the tevaya, to the plaintiff. He will either accept one of the three. If he doesn't accept it, then it'll end up in a zavlo, which we'll get to in a moment. But you can, if they keep on sending hazmanas, you can respond the same way every time. I'm coming to a din Torah. These are the batei din I'm willing to accept, not you. And there's nothing wrong with doing that.
My question is, how honest is this plaintiff who sent you a hazmanah from a Beis Din where that dayan is working from his father as a tohen?
He's not. But the fact that a plaintiff is not honest doesn't mean he's not entitled to his day in court. And therefore, you have every right to say, I'm not going to this Beis Din that I believe is in your pocket. I'm going to a legitimate Beis Din But to the extent that he's willing to come to in front of a legitimate Beis Din, submit his claims, he has the right to do so. We don't penalize someone for being dishonest or being sneaky and saying, therefore, you know, we're stripping your claims and counterclaims and defenses. That doesn't exist in halakha. So going back, in general today, although the plaintiff should have the upper hand, the practice today is not to enforce the matter. If the nitzvah is willing to go to any legitimate Beis Din, he will have the right to do so, and he cannot be forced to go to a specific Beis Din. Now, what that means in practice is that, unfortunately, there are many horror stories that travel around about Batei Din. Some of them are true, some of them aren't, some of them have some truth to it. But to a certain extent, it's irrelevant. Because although we can agree, there certainly are Batei Din that perhaps are not acting the way they should, I think most reasonable people can agree as well that three dayanim that are competent in Erlich exist out there. And to the extent that the halacha is, you can never be forced in front of a particular Beis Din. No one can tell you, appear in front of this Beis Din now. You have to respond. You have to be willing to come to a Din Torah, but you can say, not there, I want to go somewhere else. So as long as there are competent Batei Din, as long as there are two Bayrim, again, we'll get to in a moment what a Zabla is, then you can never be forced in front of a Beis Din that you feel or has a reputation of being corrupt. You always have the ability to veto any particular Beis Din and to force it to a venue that you're more comfortable with.
Except for Beis Din Kavua of the areas.
Correct. That today, Rav Moshe writes that today we don't have a Beis Din Kavua in New York.
City, as you said before, let's say a Hasidic group or a
correct.
Community
okay.
has a Beis Din.
A member of a Hasidic group who feels his Beis Din is corrupt has a more serious problem in this particular fight. You know, he doesn't want to be part of the group, he doesn't have to be part of the group, but you can't cut it both ways. You can't say, I'm a Brent of Chassid until it's again in my pocket. Then already, I'm a Litva. You know, that doesn't work. No one forces you to be a member of any group.
About tomorrow, is accompanied by equals, right? What are the options? How limited are your options then?
You can't ignore the equal. You again have the right to say, I want to go to another Beis Din. And once in good faith you choose another Beis Din, in general, a Beis Din Hamazman will withdraw the equal. And if a Teveya says, no, I only want this Beis Din, otherwise bust, a Beis Din will generally not leave an equal in place. The equal is there to protect the defendant protect the plaintiff from the defendant stalling for time and then cleaning out the bank account. But to the extent that the defendant is willing and able to show up at a legitimate Beis Din, and it's the plaintiff that doesn't want to, then the Beis Din that sends out his money should remove the equal. Now, I can't answer for every Beis Din or how they work. There are different practices. But once you show you're willing to do what al-pi halacha you're responsible to do, which is not come here, but it means to accept a Beis Din, then the Beis Din Hamazman should take a step back and remove it. Okay, so now I'd like to just get to Zabla, which is probably the most misunderstood and problematic area of what they did. And that is, whenever you have a stalemate, the plaintiff wants Beis Din A, the defendant wants Beis Din B. So as we pointed out, neither party can really impose their choice on the other. So we now have a second option. In the absence of a Beis Din Kavua, we have a concept of a Zabla, which means Zeh Boyer Loi Echad. What happens is, each party chooses a dayan to represent them. So we have the plaintiff chooses one dayan, the defendant chooses a dayan. Collectively, the two dayanim together choose a third impartial dayan. We now have a panel that was chosen equally by both parties. Each party chose one dayan, and their chosen dayan had a 50% say in choosing the third dayan. And therefore, this is a way how we deal with a stalemate. Each person has input, no one has the upper hand, and we now have a panel that is one third has a bias one way, another third bias the other way, and the deciding vote, known as the shalish, is going to be impartial, beholden to neither party, and in practice, he very often is the one that will make the bottom line decisions. Now, a zabla raises very significant questions. What is the responsibility? Or how is a boyer supposed to act? If you choose a dayan who will sit on the panel, does that mean he is your representative? Does that mean he is your paid attorney who is there to advocate on your behalf? How far does it go? So here there are a number of mufarshim, but one thing is very clear. A boirer, the dayan that was chosen by one side, ultimately his responsibility is to rule based on what he thinks is right. If he goes ahead and tries to influence the psak or give his side more because he's being paid by his side, he's working for him, then just like any dayan that paskens wrong is responsible and is doing a tremendous ibus hadin, a boirer as well, his responsibility and his achrayus is to rule based on the merits of the case, to apply halacha as he sees it. What then is the advantage of a zabla? So here we have a fascinating discussion among the Pesach. What some, and the way Rashi, according to the Gemara actually says that a zabla is a preferred route. It's better than a regular bezdin. Now this is amazing. You have a regular bezdin of three impartial dayanim. We have a zabla where we have two of them that seem to be biased and only one impartial dayan. How in the world can you say a zabla is superior to a regular bezdin? So the way some Rishonim explain it is that we don't mean it's superior, the psak will be better. What we mean is that the parties will be quicker to accept the verdict. Because when you're hauled in front of a bezdin where you had no impact in choosing the dayanim, so if you don't like the verdict, human nature is to say they were biased, they didn't understand me, they didn't, all sorts of arguments why they lost and why a person feels he does not have to comply with the psak. On the other hand, if he had a hand in choosing the dayan, one of the people on the bench was his man, the person who he chose, and who was mahata, who advocated for him. If he loses the case, he knows he was heard. He knows that at least one of the three was sympathetic to him, pushed his agenda, and if he's overruled, he was outvoted by the impartial dayan. Okay, every case has winners and losers. Some people will accept that more readily than others, but it is easier for a person to accept a psak if he had a dayan that was chosen by himself. Now, what the Achrayim say is that this does not mean the dayan is allowed to be an advocate. The dayan has to do what's right. What it means is the litigant, because he chose the dayan, he feels I have someone in my corner. Is he correct? Not necessarily. Behind closed doors, when the dayanim are discussing the matter among themselves, they all have a responsibility to paskin based on what the emes is or how they perceive it. But as far as the parties are concerned, because they chose the dayan, they will have confidence that someone was there advocating on his behalf. Now, other Rishonim learn a bit more. They learn that when you do choose a boyer, he has some responsibility being mahatuk v'suzai. He has some added responsibility to his client, to his side, to make sure that no arguments or no schusim, nothing is overlooked. But again, everyone agrees at the end of the day, when it comes to the psak, when it comes to the verdict, each boyer has to paskin based on his conscience, based on what he thinks is correct, and not based on who is paying him. Now, al pi halacha, when you have a zabla, the panel has to operate like a regular Beis Din arbitration panel, which means, just like in a regular Din Torah, if you have a litigation and you meet one of the dayanim in shul and you pull him over and you start telling him why you believe you're right, so this is, in your terminology, it's ex parte communication. It is one of the quickest and most efficient way to get an arbitration ruling overturned. In halacha, it is a lav d'oraisa of Shemoya ben Achaita. A dayan is not allowed to hear one party's claim without the other. Now, is that blah, al pi halacha, is a regular bezdin. And therefore, a boyer, even though he's chosen by one party, as a matter of strict halacha, cannot talk to that party at all outside of the bezdin. Any arguments, any discussions need to be in front of the entire panel where both parties hear every argument and everyone has the opportunity to respond. The practice today is not like this. The practice today, and this has been around, the Aruch HaShulchan discusses the practice, the minog is, when you do a zabla, each party speaks to their boyer. So it's certainly against halacha. However, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that this is accepted. If you go to a bez and before you start the dintara, you say, although halacha requires no ex parte communication, we are willing to waive this right, and I will speak to one dayan and he will speak to the other dayan. So whether it's a good idea or not, I don't know. But if the parties accept it and they agree to it beforehand, then the panel has the right to do so. And in practice, that is typically what happens. Each buyer will stick to his side outside of the actual din Torah. The shalish is protected. The shalish will not speak to anyone, desh like the Fenezeh, but this is the practice. Now, because it is not, this is really against halacha. So although this is the minhag, and if the parties choose to do so, then you know the decision is binding. The Shev HaLevi writes that either party has the, if you're forced to a zavla, the party has the right to say, listen, you're forcing me to a zavla, you have the right to do so, because halacha prefers this. But you can't force me to waive my rights, and you can't force me to allow ex parte communication. And therefore, it is perfectly legitimate to respond when you're being called to a zavla, okay, I'll pick my dayan, you'll pick your dayan, but it has to be run up the halacha. And I will not speak to my dayan outside of the actual din Torah, and I'm insisting you do not speak to your dayan either. And if you make such a, if you make this clear before you begin, Shevet HaLevi says you have the right to force this on the other party. You cannot be forced to come to a zavla where there will be ex parte communication. Now, as an ace tell you, this is something that I would very strongly recommend. If you are going to end up in front of a zavla, this is a good idea to exercise this right and to insist, even if it's in the zavla, it be run like a regular bezel.
How about either way, if the cousin sends an email to this party that's representing him, but he sends it to the other side and to the other guy as well.
So in halacha, you have, in theory, you have the, you're not allowed to submit any claims in writing. And in contrast to court, the parties can say, I want all discussion in front of the bezin. I want you to look me in the eye when you tell me, when you make up that story. In practice, generally, it's in everyone's interest to allow emails, to allow written communications, as long as it's CC to all parties, or as long as it's understood the bezin that when you receive an email from one party, we'll forward it to the other party as well as the dayanim. That's typically what in practice. You have the right to object, but it's generally not done, and it's generally not a good idea. Let me just finish up. Let me just now. One general observation is that many of the horror stories that go around about Batei Din involve a zavla setup. And there are a number of reasons for this. The first, when you compare a zavla to a regular sitting Beis Din, the first difference is the cost. When you're dealing with a Boyeris, today the rate is $300 an hour per dayan. You add that, you know, each party is paying half of that, so that's, you add, on top of that, you add what you're paying the Tayanim, the cost can add up rather quickly. A regular budget din do not charge anywhere near those kinds of rates. Besides for the difference in the hourly rate, there in general is a huge difference in the amount of time that the din Torah take. Because when you're going in front of a regular bezin, there's typically a safer, the diner, there's someone who's in charge of the process, they're dayanim that have worked together, and things move a lot more efficiently. When you have a boyerus, there's no safer dayanim, there's no secretary, there's no one who's shepherding the process along. It is much more difficult for bezin to control the parties, because each person has one dayan who's quote unquote, you know, backing them up, and it's much more difficult for bezin to put their foot down to force the matter forward, and it generally takes much longer when you're dealing with a zavla than when you're dealing with a regular bezin. On top of that, because the practice today in a zavla is to speak zesh l'bifneza, to have ex parte communication, unless you made a condition beforehand, that also, it taints the process in a way, and although the Gemara says a zavla is superior, because people are more likely to be comfortable with the outcome because they feel they were represented, today, the way the system works, I think the exact opposite is true. People are generally much less satisfied with the outcome of the zavla because of the fact that there was ex parte communication, and therefore, if you have a choice, it is generally a much more pleasant, cheaper, and just more efficient process to go through a regular bezin than to end up in a zavla. You do not always have that choice, but if it is up to you, if you're given batei din that aren't your first choice, you should think long and hard, as long as it's a reasonable option, you should think long and hard before you try to force the matter to a zavla. Another problem with the zavla is, although you will control your dayan, and you will be able to control who the shalish is, you have no control who the other party's dayan is. And he may choose someone who is a Tayin or someone who does not know halacha and not qualified to sit, which certainly can taint the process. Now, just to share an observation, although people, there is a certain way of thought that if you're in a Zav law, you should hire a Tayin, you should hire the biggest thug that you can find to represent you, because you're better off having an aggressive person fighting on your behalf. You do have to keep in mind that if you're in a Zav law, the person ultimately making the decision is going to be the Shalosh, the middle independent Dayan. Now, the people who act as a Shalosh are generally extremely competent people and have fairly thick skins, because their role really is to deal with the Dayan, the Boyerim, to deal with the parties and make a decision. So if you believe, if you hire a Boyer who comes across as an Erlich HaTalmud Chacham, he's a reasonable person, he will defend you when you are right, he will advocate all the Tzadim and Halacha that are in your favor, so then hopefully that will have an impact, and hopefully you will get everything that you're entitled to. On the other hand, if your advocate is nothing more than a thug, who's going to rant and rave whether you're right or wrong, he's just going to push and yell and scream that his party is right, is that really going to sway the Shalosh? If you think, yes, that the Shalosh is a feeble-minded, you know, idiot, you probably shouldn't be going to Zav law in the first place. You should find another Shalosh. If you do have confidence that at least the Shalosh is impartial, is going to do what's right, then you are much better off having a Boyer who will come across with a certain amount of respectability and a certain amount of competence. He will defend you when you're right. He will advocate studim that exist, as opposed to someone who will just push, push, and push without any thought of what the MS is. Okay, we're actually out of time. We're going to have a 10-minute break where there are some refreshments in the back. Everyone can help themselves. We'll start the next year in exactly 11 o'clock.